Hello, and welcome to episode 18 of Engaging Internal Comms. This is the podcast for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. Hello, my name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. I hope you've had a chance to listen to our previous episodes. If this is the first time you've joined us on the show on Engaging Internal Comms, then there are previous episodes available on our website, engagingic.com, and also via your favorite podcast platform. Next week, we have got an interview with Rob Woodhead, who is from Simply Better. Any of you who've worked in the internal communication space in the UK, particularly in the North and in Yorkshire, may know Rob. You may have come across Rob. Rob's organization creates amazing experiences, bringing people together for events and other ways of getting people to communicate and engage with each other. Rob's business has naturally had to face some of the challenges that we've all faced during the pandemic. And Rob and I had a fantastic conversation that we've already recorded that we're going to be putting out next week, which is all about the future of face-to-face communications and if and how we're going to get people back together in those sort of collaborative face-to-face events where we want people to have kind of really amazing experiences that take them on a journey with us and our organization. So that's a really interesting conversation that Rob and I had. That's got some provocative thoughts for all of us who are working in internal communications and regularly use events or when we get people together on a regular basis. And I think Rob's got some really useful things to share with us to get us to sort of look at that from a different perspective. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to the show. It makes a huge difference to our visibility. And as I mentioned last week, we're coming towards the end of season one. I haven't actually decided when it's going to end yet. It could be after episode 20 or 21. But we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to be coming back with a slightly different format. We're still going to have have interviews, but then we'll also probably have a few episodes where we delve into different topics in different areas. So slightly different format, but still going to be obviously looking at engagement and internal communications. That's what we're all about, and that's what we're interested in. Anyway, on to this episode's interview. One of the areas that I wanted to explore is this concept of scar tissue and scar tissue for organizations. And the pandemic of 2020 has no doubt been a cause of a lot of scar tissue, both financially and economically for businesses, but also in terms of the employees within the organizations and their well-being and their own mental health. And I think this is a topic that's probably of interest to a lot of people involved in employee engagement and internal communications. So this is an area that I wanted to explore. I'm really interested in the idea that we build resilience within our teams and we help people to foster their own resilience within the organization in order to help them to deal with some of this scar tissue that inevitably falls out of a crisis like the pandemic. However, as I said, it's not just pandemics. We're all constantly going through reorganizations, restructurings, downsizings, that sort of thing. And all of these events create scar tissue that I think organizations need to get better at dealing with and better at helping their employees to deal with. So that's the subject for today's interview, and I think you'll find this a really interesting conversation. So for today's interview, we're going to be talking all about how do we deal with the scar tissue of major disruption. My interviewee is Leanne Spencer, who is the founder of Body Shop Performance, which is an award-winning health and well-being company. Leanne's expertise are all around health, fitness, well-being, and especially focusing on sleep, mental health, energy, resilience, fitness, immune health, and the challenges of remote working. Leanne is a podcaster and a TED speaker too, and I think all of the things she's going to be talking about today are highly relevant in our kind of post-pandemic or our pandemic ravaged world. Leanne, how are you? How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, Craig. You have a wonderful voice for radio, by the way. Silky smooth, yes. There's no subtext there. I don't know what you look like, so that wasn't
a, well. I've certainly got a face for radio, I think. So
that's not what I would say. Anyway, I'm very well, thanks, and thank you for having me on.
That's no problem at all. Yeah, and you're based down in London, I think.
I am, believe. Yeah. Okay. I'm in South London, yeah, which is where our office is and also, yeah, where I'm based. I actually live 7 minutes down the road from our office, so that's quite nice in a way. I wouldn't mind it being a slightly longer walk, but...
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so Body Shop. I love the name, and I'd love to know a little bit more about the business. I'm sure our listeners would. And the name, where does the name come from? And what's the significance of the name Body Shop?
Okay, I'll come to that bit in a second. So the business, as you say, we're an award-winning wellbeing company. We use technology and science-based solutions to create happy, healthy, and resilient teams. So we've worked with businesses like Britvic, iTech Media, where I'm the head of wellbeing, actually, Zendesk, Brooks McDonald, Zurich is a very recent client. And the idea behind it with creating the happy, healthy, and resilient teams is we have an audit service, which enables us to go in and identify what the issues are. There are always issues, but often they're not the issues the HR team anticipate they are. We have workshops, so very bespoke workshops where we use a bit of technology to get insights into each individual. And they're typically around sleep or energy, sometimes fitness and weight management, staying resilient in uncertain times, building your new normal, which is all about, you know, the potential return to the office. And we also work with the leaders. So we have coaching packages to work with leaders, and we have online solutions as well. So all the content we produce can be put into a bespoke portal for clients. We have a bespoke guide, a PDF, also a digital guide that encapsulates everything we know about wellbeing. So it's we were already online prior to the pandemic, and obviously that's stood us in very good stead happened in March. And the reason for the name, I have to tell you, there's really no great thinking went into it. 8 years ago, I set up Body Shop Personal Training, as it was then. Having left my city career, having had a burnout and medicating against the stress with huge amounts of alcohol, I needed to transform just about everything. So I left my job, literally resigned with nothing to go to and no savings because I was a hedonist. So I kind of jumped, if you like, off the cliff and then thought, have I packed a parachute? But it worked out for me. Body Shots came about because I loved boxing and still do. I thought, a shot to the body, not just a physical shot. That's a bit of an aggressive image, but, a shot to the body of energy, of awakening, of adrenaline. And that's really where it came about. And that worked really well for personal training. I have thought in recent times, does that create the right kind of image for a wellbeing company? Mm. But I think for me to sort of muck around with the company name now might be tinkering while Rome isn't burning, but tinkering in the wrong, focusing on the wrong thing, because no one thus far has said to me, we'd love to do business with you. We love you. We love your team. We love your branding, but we just don't like the company name.
Yeah. Yeah. As someone who's been through a company name change recently, it's not to be underestimated how disruptive it is. So I totally understand. So we that's very, really helpful. Thank you. And we're going to dive into some of those areas that you've talked about there. So we met via Antoinette Oglethorpe, who was one of my interviewees on episode 11. And, I think it was, she knew me and she knew I was interested in health and fitness. And I thought, it'd be really interesting to know your background, a little bit more about your background and why fitness is something that you think is really important, not from a physical perspective, but also from a mental health perspective as well. So where did your interest in fitness and well-being from that perspective come from?
Well, I mean, I've always been interested in fitness. I played a lot of tennis when I was younger. I had a big sort of gap at university where there wasn't a great deal of fitness done. And I've always been quite interested on the personal level. Certainly in the last 8 to 10 years, it's a huge part of what I do on a not daily basis, but every other day. I think the benefits of physical exercise are huge and well publicized, and there are a whole ton of studies that back it up, both for energy, but also for disease risk and mitigation, for mental health as well. We know that when we move, for example, a study found that when participants had a brisk walk for 10 minutes, they got an overall increase in mood and energy that lasted for 2 hours afterwards. So that's extraordinary, isn't it? 10 minutes of brisk walking, which just about anyone can do. You can do that around a small garden or even in the house if you can't get outside. It gets you 2 hours of improved mood and energy. And the same study found that if participants did this for 3 weeks or longer, their overall mood and energy improved. So that alone, there's another great quote that I use a lot from the chief medical officer, which is, if the benefits of exercise could be encapsulated in a pill or a bottle, it'd be hailed as a wonder drug or a miracle cure. And that was Liam Donaldson. So I've always been a very big believer in exercise. And for me personally, I cannot imagine not doing it. And I don't mean, you know, I'm always out there doing Instagram. I'm not even on Instagram. Videos of me jumping up and down in burpees or workouts. I mean, I do it quietly behind the scenes, but I do let people know the difference it makes to how I feel, both about myself and the wider world. It's just absolutely crucial for me to maintain a fairly high level of movement. So that, from a personal level, that's how important it is for me. And I have a few non-negotiables. I don't have non-negotiables about exercise because I haven't done that much this week because of various reasons. Not time, because that will never get in the way. But I did a massive workout on Saturday and then I did a bit of kickboxing on Monday. And not much since because I felt that my body needed a bit of a break. And I do believe in that intelligent way of training now, which is listening to what the body's telling you. But I'll do something tonight. But I do have a minimum non-negotiable of 10,000 steps a day minimum.
Yeah.
So movement is actually, fitness is a very broad term. What I mean by it is your fitness for the rigors of daily life.
Yeah.
I don't mean your ability to lift heavy or run fast, but your overall fitness. And that's about how you sleep. It's about what you do to stay mentally well. It's about how you energize yourself, you know, what people, places and things are energizing. It is also about your functional fitness. You know, can I get from A to B in a given time? Can I lift my own suitcase off the carousel in the airport? Can I lift shopping? Can I lift children? It is also about functional physical fitness, but it's far broader than that.
Yeah.
And you asked a bit about the origins of Body Shop performance. So when we were Body Shop personal training, one of the reasons that we pivoted away from physical PT is that clients were coming to us. And what they really needed, and these are busy professionals, and what they really needed was to take their rucksack of stuff off their back, both literally but also figuratively, and go for a walk and have a chat. They did not need a high-intensity exercise session.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what they thought they were paying for, and we just felt we weren't serving people, even though we were great PTs, we weren't serving them as well as we could be because they didn't need that kind of sympathetic dominant nervous system session. They needed something that was more parasympathetic promoting. And we also thought that physical training is just a small part of overall health, as I've already mentioned. So we created this methodology called the Six Signals, which looks at sleep, mental health, energy, body composition, digestive health, and fitness. And we designed some coaching programs all around the Six Signals. So fitness was just a small component of overall health. And then the next evolution for us was to think, well, instead of working with individuals on a one-to-one basis, we're quite slow then in how we can scale what we do. Let's look at helping businesses with the health of their people so we can do what we do at scale. And that's where we've got to now. So that's kind of a brief summary of where fitness fits and how it's kind of changed within the business.
It's really helpful. No, it's really, really, really helpful. And I think, you know, that I think that's a nice way to sort of to turn to what I want to really talk about now, which is the sort of theme of this interview, which is this idea of scar tissue. And I think for most of us in the context of the pandemic, you know, whether we see it as we're now in a post-pandemic world or whether we're still in the middle of a pandemic or, you know, whatever, wherever we see ourselves, regardless of that, whether it's the pandemic or whether it's other major disruption, either caused by the pandemic or just the general rigors of the modern world, whether it's downsizing or reorganizations or restructuring, which is, you know, ever present and will likely to be for the foreseeable future, is this idea of what we talked about is this idea of scar tissue and the scar tissue that creates, and how, as a metaphor, and how organizations should start to maybe think about how they can heal that scar tissue or at least do something with it that means it isn't as disfiguring, I guess, to the organizational culture and psyche. So I'd just like to explore that with you, this idea of what is scar tissue in this context and what can organizations do, what are insightful organizations doing, some of the work that you're doing with organizations doing to help to heal some of that scar tissue or at least deal with it, as it were.
Yeah. What I mean by scar tissue is, I think as we enter the next phase of recovery, and I think that's how I'm comfortable describing it. I don't know if we're post-pandemic or peri-pandemic or what, but it's the next phase of recovery, certainly. And we are contemplating a return to the office. I think early August, Boris Johnson and the government said, if you want to go back, go back. Certainly amongst my client base, there's not been a rush back to the office. I think generally there hasn't been, but we are thinking about that. And what I think businesses need to be hyper aware of is the scar tissue that people may be carrying with them. So For example, and this is obviously generalizing, not everyone feels this way, but some people might be reticent to leave a spouse who is maybe needs them. Maybe they have some sort of special, or children who they're reluctant to leave. They may have aging parents or like as their spouse they're caring for. They may be loath to leave. Pets as well, you know, cats and dogs, dogs in particular. You may be reticent to give the dogs back to. And this might sound a bit, oh, like, come on, it's a pet. But actually, this is going to be playing on people's minds, I think. We've got used to being home and our dependents have got used to having us around. So that's one aspect of it. The other is that people may be worried about coming back in on public transport or coming back into shared spaces that are offices. They're going to be coming into contact with more people. And I really don't want us to get into a place where we become afraid of each other. But the risk does go up with the more people you come into contact with. The whole point of social distancing was to counter that. So people may be concerned about that, if not for themselves, for their families. So, you know, whoever's going out and coming into contact with most people is the weakest link in the family. So there may be some concern about that. I also know some friends and colleagues of mine who've got people who are shielding at home or they're quite vulnerable due to physical reasons. So there's going to be a bit of that as well. Also, some of us in organisations may have been made redundant or may still be out on furlough, but you're one of the ones who's made it, who's coming back to the office. So there could be some survivor's guilt around that as well. I also know some people who've been promoted, but there's at the cost of others who've been made redundant. So there could be a bit of imposter syndrome and some guilt around that as well. So this is the kind of thing I'm talking about with scar tissue. Also, you know, we can go lots of different ways with this. There may be people who genuinely loved being at home and don't want to come back into a busy office. They do their best work on their own when they're uninterrupted, and they may feel a certain pressure to come back. Some companies, you know, I'm the head of wellbeing at iTech Media, and they've been super clear to employees that if you want to come back, we'll let you know when it's ready. If you want to come back in a blended way, we can work with you on that. And if you don't want to come back ever, that's absolutely cool. But they've got a very young workforce. So a lot of them are in flat shares. So they've been working, living, sleeping in the same room for the last 4 months, 5 months, and they're desperate to get back into some semblance of normality in an office that was, you know, full of cool stuff like table tennis tables or pool tables and all this stuff. And, you know, whether that will still be there, I don't know, but they're desperate to come back. But, you know, extroverts will maybe want to come back to the office. Introverts will be dreading the idea of it. We're all probably going to be carrying a little bit of scar tissue. I know that if I was having to go back to the office and been forced to, I would be a little reluctant to be as well. And then there's the pressure of thinking, well, I know you said I don't have to be back, but everyone else in my team is going back. So I kind of feel like if I'm not there, I'm not listening to all the little chat that goes on, getting the insights, getting the instant feedback of looking at my teammates and my boss. So maybe I think I've got to come back. That's what I'm talking about with scar tissue. And I think businesses are going to have to be aware of that. And I think the most highly prized, for want of a better expression, commodity is going to be emotional intelligence, because we're also going to have to get a gauge on how people are feeling and what they're thinking remotely. So, you know, all that real-time feedback that we used to get isn't quite there with Zoom. So these, I think, some of the fundamental challenges that businesses are going to be faced with. And if a company has been seen to be putting profit before people, they may not leave now, but the minute that a better opportunity comes along, they will move. So it's interesting times for businesses.
Yeah. I think there's been a lot of, there's definitely been a lot of people certainly, you know, paying attention to that element and talking about it. I think for me, the interesting thing is how much that will be sustained when, you know, pressure to do rebuild the bottom line starts to come back and you know, businesses are facing, you know, almost crisis of existence in some cases, and how much that attention to well-being will still be front of people's minds. I think that will be quite interesting. And so being aware of that, it sounds as though to me, as though being aware of that scar tissue, not just assuming that everybody is just back to normal. I think, you know, building on what you were saying there, I think there's a significant amount of scar tissue built up around the fact that it has, I think you could look at it almost from a sort of PTSD perspective. I think a lot of people probably haven't realized how strange and weird and difficult it's actually been for these last few months. I think there's a danger of you kind of drift into a sense of normality that isn't actually normal. And it's only when you're able to step away from it and see it for what it was that, you know, it's been really, really really strange, and it's been really difficult and really challenging. And I think the monotony for a lot of people, I know from my own personal perspective, is that, okay, it's been a healthy monotony. There's been the kind of, you know, we were talking earlier about exercise. It's been a very routine that definite routine that I've built up, but at the same time, it has been monotonous. And then actually just getting away from that, I think, and observing it from afar will be really, really weird, and actually will then probably surface some issues that I never really kind of thought about at the time because I was just getting on with it. So I think there's a lot of that still to be sort of gone through for organizations. I do think there's an element of debriefing people that I think organizations need to do, both from a perspective of how can we help you to sort of, you know, move on, but also I think there's some powerful learnings that have probably been made that need to be debriefed as well. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? And how can organizations start? So awareness, talking about it, being aware, what can organizations then start to think to do in order to sort of start to deal with some of that scar tissue that's developed through this whole sort of weird period?
Well, at a very high level, I think policies around, or not policies, a strategy of leading with well-being. And we're talking here about game-changing companies who want to really grow. They want well-being to be a competitive advantage. They want to pick up any talent that's out in the market because they've either been made redundant or they've left because they don't like the way they've been treated during the lockdown period. There's a huge opportunity, and lead with well-being really means that well-being touches every decision within the business. And that's kind of a strategic thing. It needs to be supported at a CEO level and board level and within the C-suite entirely. So people who really talk about well-being, what it means to them and the difference it makes to their energy, their performance and their overall happiness. That's the kind of top level. One of the things that we've been doing with people is running workshops called Build Your New Normal, which is it's working with small groups to really ask three big questions. And this is talking about the individual now rather than the organization. But, you know, what old habits did you shake off that you want to keep off as we move into the next phase of recovery? What good habits did you adopt that you want to keep a hold of? The second question is, what obstacles get in the way of that success, of those things being maintained? And then the third question is, what are the non-negotiables that need to happen to make sure that you maintain this way of living? My big concern is that as we start to come back to the office, we may sleepwalk back into old habits and patterns. And a conversation with an HR director of a company of about 300-400 people, she said yesterday, no, I've gone right back into my old habits, old patterns. All the good stuff that I picked up in lockdown has gone. So I'm really concerned that from an individual level, we don't do that, because I think in the main, people's well-being has gone up a little bit because you've got that bit of time back. You're not losing time commuting. You've just got a little bit more headspace and a bit bandwidth. And I know that's not the case for everybody, but quite a few people have taken some positives from this. So I'm really concerned that we don't sleepwalk our way back into old patterns and habits. And we've got a great opportunity right now from an individual micro level and a macro level from the company side of things to redefine how we do work and redefine what we want our lives to look like. So to give you an example, one of the things I loved, and there were many things I loved about lockdown, to be honest, the quietness in the air, the quietness on the roads, nature, literally peeking its head back out, many things, but also the fact that we had very little in the diary. I've gone from being a chronic overscheduler to a reasonably good scheduler. But even so, once things started to strip out the diary in March, I thought, this is great. We've got nothing on. You know, I actually had to look at my diary sometimes and go, no, there's nothing in there. And that's one of the things I'd really like to maintain, having at least Sunday free every week so we can be spontaneously do nothing or spontaneously go out and go to wherever it may be. So we're working with individuals to try and help them to construct that new normal and see what that looks like, but also working with businesses to do some more strategic work on what leading with well-being looks like. What kind of resources do people need available to them? And the first step is really about understanding how people are feeling. Because we're not getting so much real-time feedback, surveys, one-to-ones, maybe having people buddy up with each other, doing more exciting stuff, to giving people gifts via the post because, we're so getting things online. So really understanding how people are feeling. So we're taking out all the guesswork. And then running sort of tailored workshops that respond to that data, that give people what they need. And we've gone back to we put together this series of five workshops and went back to basics. So we start with sleep, because I think sleep is the force multiplier. You know, when you're getting a good night's sleep, it's easier to think about your mental well-being. It's easier to think about what energizes you. It's easier to get those non-negotiables done every day. It's just a lot easier. Now, when you're not sleeping so well, it's like wading through treacle, isn't it, just to get to the, to the starting blocks of your day. So sleep is one we look at. Energy. Most people would love more energy to do the things they want to do in life. So we look at that in all sorts of different contexts, really. You know, what people energize you, what environments energize you. I think a lot of people are getting an afternoon slump because they're sat down for too long. They don't even have that little bit of commute at the beginning of the day, even if it's just to a bus or a train, or even just across a car park to get to the office in the morning. So strategies, practical strategies on how to set up your working environment so it's more conducive towards movement. And one bit of advice I can give listeners now on that is look at your desk. I'm looking at mine now, and it is fairly well set up for movement. So I've got hardly anything on the desk, so I can't quickly reach for a pen. I'm on a standing workstation. It's a £25 unit that you just get from Amazon. If you put laptop table into Amazon, and you put that on the desk, you can put your laptop on top, or you can use a windowsill, an ironing board, piles of magazines and books. You know, it's just something that elevates your screen or your laptop a little bit. I've got a wobble board. It's not very wobbly. It's just slightly wobbly. And I don't have things around me. So my mobile phone's not close to hand. So if it goes off, I've got to get up and move.
Got it.
I'll try and take phone calls outside for a walk. So it's just making sure the environment is set up for movement so that it's energizing.
Yeah.
In my office, we're actually moving today to a slightly bigger but more quiet office because everything's online now and I can't have the background noise. We've got a lot of pictures of the endurance events and the fun stuff we've done on the walls as well. I've got a big picture of Noel Gallagher. Just to remind me not to take myself too seriously. You know, business doesn't need to be serious. And if anyone can tell you not to take yourself too effing seriously, it'll be one of the Gallagher brothers. So that's up there. You know, you might think, well, what's that got to do with energy? But it does bring a different kind of energy into the room. So all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a bit about going back to basics with the content we put out. And then talking about resilience as well. Resilience and immunity are two big topics at the moment. But this all comes from the research that we've done into what people need, and then their ideas I can put across to a client, and the client will say, well, we've done a survey and we think it's more about this.
Yeah.
Or actually, listening to people, I think we really need to do something on that. So there's a lot of bespoke elements to it as well.
I really like what you're saying there, and it kind of resonates with me at the beginning, which is this, you know, the part of the way of looking at the scar tissue is to reverse that and actually look at, you know, from an appreciative perspective of what we can learn from this experience. Because I think you're right. I think even most people, even people who've endured quite a lot of difficulty, will recognize that they've actually, there are some positives from this. You know, I think I totally agree with you that, you know, the whole thing around, I've kind of reevaluated some of the things that I, you know, was doing before and that stopped because of necessity, that I've now sort of, you know, so I'm like you, I try and take an extra day a week where I don't work as much. I actually build time in to do stuff with my wife and that time that I would normally just work. Now, I guess we're fortunate in that we run our own businesses and we can sort of be a little bit more of masters and mistress of our own destiny, as it were. But I think that's really important. But I also think that whole thing around habits, you know, look, really sort of stepping back and look at what are the real positive habits that I've developed. What are some of the maybe the ones that I don't want to come back afterwards? And I think societally, I think it's really interesting, isn't it? Because everybody was saying, you know, that's it. You know, there'll be less, no cars on the road anymore. Everybody be able to sort of cycle in safety and not have to worry about getting knocked over by cars and things like that. And then you look back at the roads now, and they're not really different to how they were back in February or January before it all started. You know, so I do think for all of the proclamations that this was a brave new world that we would be going into, I think there is a danger that we just sort of let it all drift back in. And on top of that, we've then got all the bad stuff, which is, you know, people worrying about their jobs and job security and the economy and all of that sort of stuff piled on top of all of the stuff we had before. So I think it's a real conscious effort to sift out the good stuff from the bad is really important.
Yeah.
From a from a socialization perspective, when we spoke originally, we talked about this, and it's one thing we're really interested in is about this kind of re-socialization aspect, is that there will be organizations, you know, that I think you're right. I think there will be a lot of people who will work semi-hybrid, you know, working from home virtually, partly going into offices, but there will be some people who will, but given the nature of their work, who will have to re-socialize because that's just the nature of their work. It will all make sense for people to go back to work. What are some of the thoughts you've got around some of the well-being and scar tissue issues related to bringing people back together? Not only from I know from you, you mentioned earlier about, you know, people might have genuine anxiety about, you know, either catching the virus because now re-socializing. I'm talking more about, I think some people have become a bit feral and a bit used to sort of just hiding behind the perspex or not actually having to kind of engage with people. And I do think we've maybe lost some of our social skills. And I think, you know, I can't remember if it was you or someone else I was talking to about this idea of the kind of immune system that's been suppressed through through this. So I think our physical immune systems might have been compromised, but also I think our ability to, you know, just to be polite and sociable and not have to sort of, you know. So I'm just interested in your thoughts on that and what organizations can do from that perspective and what are some of the sort of socialization issues that organizations might face going forward.
Yes. So I was going to mention this at the end about what people don't know much about me. So I don't know if I'll drop it in now.
Go on. Go on. Let's be unconventional. You can talk about it now. And then
I very recently became a Bear Grylls survival instructor. I have not yet drunk my own urine or slept in a dead animal. But
Snake, I hasten to add. You have to do it from a snake, apparently.
Oh, right. Okay. No, I haven't done any of that yet. But I have done quite a few of Bear's stunts and been taught his survival skills and so on. I did their flagship 5-day survival Highlands course last September. So one of the things I think is an opportunity for is getting – so firstly, to your point, yes, we've gone from clapping for the NHS and being supportive and saying, yeah, to your neighbour, do you need a pint of milk or can I go to the chemist for you? Just shooting people down in flames every time somebody says, you know, I'd like to help a black cafe owner. Does anyone know of one? You know, to well-intentioned sort of post-BLM stuff. To being really quite vitriolic towards each other, or at least so it seems on social media. Have we lost the art of human connection? I don't think so, but we are hardwired to connect, and connection is very important. We get a lot of oxytocin when we connect. We get serotonin when we connect. You know, in fact, if you can hug a stranger for 20 seconds or longer, I mean, don't try that at the moment, for God's sake, but if you hug a stranger for 20 seconds or longer, which is way longer than feels comfortable, you get a release of oxytocin. So we are very much hardwired to connect, but connection isn't just physical connection, you know, it's eye contact as well. It's realizing you both have something very significant in common. And it's just being around other people and being sociable, and some people prefer that more than others. But I think businesses are going to have to get around that issue and make sure that not only is there a safe environment for people to come back to and they're confident that it's safe, but also people will need to be brought back together, I think, for that sort of sense of unity and bonding. To get to bring back the Bear Grylls side of things, it struck me that there's an opportunity to do, instead of getting people together on-site, getting them together off-site, because I heard a scientist talk about her three rules for re-engagement during, you know, post-pandemic or mid-pandemic. One is that what's the airflow like in the place I'm going to? The second question is how long am I going to be there? And the third is how many other people will be there? So getting a group of people outdoors doing survival-type activities, you know, you've got the airflow issue sorted because you're outside, the volume of number of people you control, but it doesn't really matter how long you're there because you're all outside and connecting and engaging in different ways. So I think we may see an increase of people like me or companies like ours maybe partnering with someone to do those sort of outdoor activities. But people coming together in different ways. It won't be town hall anymore. It'll be more offsite type of stuff, which will suit some people more than it does others. But I definitely think we'll see more of that. More creative ways that we can get together and do off-sites.
I like that. I'm up for that. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. Yeah, yeah. I've done some. I'm trying to think some of the ones I did over my career. I live in the north of England, and there used to be a superb outdoor events thing they used to do around Kielder Lake, which is, you know, biggest man-made lake in Europe. And we used to do some amazing stuff up there. And I used to work for a water company that was the custodians of it as well, which was great. So we used to do some amazing stuff. But yeah, I mean, as you say, that's not everybody, doesn't float everybody's boat. But I think if it's done in a way that's inclusive and for people who maybe that isn't their thing, they can still feel as though, you know, included in that, and that they feel safe. I think that's a really, really good way of looking at it.
I think a few people are listening from the HR or business owners. I think companies are starting to think more creatively like this, and companies that really position well-being, lead with well-being in terms of their recruitment and their marketing as well. And obviously there needs to be teeth in the gums on this stuff. They need to be actually doing it, not just talking about it. But they're the companies that will thrive. You think about the ways that the companies compete for talent at the moment. It's salary package, it's other perks and benefits like offices and company cars. I think organizations more and more need to lead with well-being, because certainly at iTech, as I mentioned, I'm the head of well-being there 2 days a week. What they're telling me now is that people are asking about flexible working, and they're asking about well-being. They're not asking about salary and whatever else. So that's what people want now. They genuinely want to know about how they can work flexibly and what you'll do to keep them well, because companies are very good at occupational health, in health insurance, employee assistance programs, but that's all very reactive. There is a problem. We need to get on top of this because somebody's burning out. Why not put that investment into preventing people from getting that way in the first place? Really good internal comms, workshops, systems, resources, and then managers with tons of emotional intelligence that know how to look for these issues and nip them in the bud before they happen, all of which is backed at the very top level, at sea level, backed, supported, and vocally and visibly supported by them.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, certainly... millennials, and it's a sort of bit of a cliche, but I think, you know, their expectations are probably very different to certainly my generation. You know, when I came into the world of work was, you know, as you say, it was career ladders. It was, you know, get as high as you can, as quick as you can, more as, you know, nicest perks and sort of thing. But I think it is very different now. I think, yeah, that's kind of their hygiene factors, and it's very much around the whole package, isn't it, about this lifestyle and the well-being and the kind of, you know, much more sort of purpose driven approach that I think exists, which I think is a great thing. So just finally, you mentioned there very briefly around for some like an internal comms, and I think it's implicit in what we've been talking around, you know, there's certainly engagement perspective, employee engagement, about what employee engagement is all about and what people need and the kind of well-being aspects of that. But just generally, you know, the people listening to this show, you know, you mainly working in employee engagement, internal communications. Any final tips from thinking about people who are working in those professions, any final tips from you in terms of how they can really sort of factor in this sort of dealing with this scar tissue that we're facing from a well-being perspective in their line of work?
Yeah, I think it needs to be driven by what people are thinking and feeling and telling you they need. So I wouldn't scrimp on the audit side of things. However you do that, I mean, people can generate their own surveys and probably have their own internal comms tools to run those sort of things. But ask the questions. Get people perhaps into small groups and ask them how they're feeling, or provide them with a way of confidentially feeding that back to you. And then do not be afraid of matching your intention with investment. It's short-sighted now not to act on this stuff, because, you know, I've got some statistics from the CIPD very recently published in the last month or so. 22% of people think they'll lose their jobs in the next 12 months. So, I mean, whether it's true or not, they have that perception. How much energy is that consuming? 43% of people with existing mental health conditions said the pandemic has contributed to or worsened their condition. And 29% of people with anxiety said the pandemic has contributed to or worsened their condition. So that's quite startling data. So I definitely think understanding how people are feeling, sort of taking the temperature, if you like, of your organization is key. And then ensuring that there is budget to go in and be very proactive about handling that. giving people options about whether they come back or not, just demonstrating sometimes that you're aware they may be feeling this way, I think can be huge. And doing what you can to really position well-being as the thing that you want to lead with, that your organization cares about this. It's backed up at the very top level of the organization. And here are the measures you're putting in place for this, making sure people have got those resources. You can't force them to consume those resources, but you can put them in front of people, at least make sure they're there. So if I want to find out how I can sleep better, I have that. Very briefly on my, and I appreciate this isn't available to everyone, but the head of wellbeing role, I do 2 days a week for iTech Media. And originally I started off opening up my Thursday morning for people to book in on what we call mini wellbeing sessions. So it's 20 minutes, which actually is a good length of time. It may not sound much, but you can get quite a bit done. And they very soon became booked up for weeks in advance. And now I've opened up Tuesday mornings as well. So thinking about that, thinking about having someone in on an outsourced basis where they can just book in short time slots to talk about what's going on, because the feedback from that's been incredible. I can't believe the company provides us with a well-being expert that we can speak to. And sometimes people want to pick my brains about how to optimize their workouts, so non-critical. And sometimes, more often, they are really, really low on energy, really low on sleep, and they need a few pointers. And of course, it's a confidential space. Sometimes they just want to say, I'm really feeling quite low about this, you know, and they've just been able to speak to someone. So it's quite tremendous. A lot in all of that. But listen to what's going on, and then make sure there's budget to act on it. Otherwise, eventually, I think people will become disheartened and they'll realize that they're not really the priority despite anything that might be said. And when they can, they'll go.
What was the name of the CIPD report that you mentioned there?
I will send the report on to you afterwards. I actually just have the data on a slide.
Okay,
I'll send it on afterwards.
Yeah, it'd be great. No, it'd be great to include a link to that, I think, in the show notes for people, because I think that sounds really insightful. Well, look, that's been absolutely fantastic, Leanne. I think it's really been an interesting conversation. I'm really interested in this link between well-being, physical and mental health, and this whole sort of scar tissue issue that organizations are going to be facing and are facing. And again, as I said, I think it's not just pandemic. There's always change, always creates casualties, always creates its own scar tissue that organizations, I think, need to be mindful of. We've already talked about your there's something we didn't know about you. We've got a bit unconventional there. So the Bear Grylls thing. So, I mean, let's just do what does that involve? And when will you be on TV drinking from snakes and things like that? And when will we see?
The TV thing isn't totally laughable proposition, because what I'm on now is the bottom rung of the ladder that goes up to doing shows with Bear. But I don't know if that's not a particular aspiration. I like variety. I think variety is a really underappreciated aspect of well-being. So I have for the last, here's your thing that people won't know as well. I have for the last 18 months taken one day a week to go work with a friend on property development. And I mean in there on the properties. So I've learned a huge amount of skills, from plasterboarding to architrave to skirting board to the importance of millimetres, because one mil does make a lot of difference, particularly when you're doing architrave, which is the stuff that goes around door frames. It won't fit if it's a mil out. All kinds of things, really. Demolishing wall, it's quite interesting. I did it to start with, to help out for a couple of weeks. I thought, actually, I really like the variety of this. I really like the skills that I've been picking up. So that's the thing that very few people know. And then the Bear Grylls stuff is a sideline. So I've been offered a week's work in October half term to go and do a kids camp in Canvas Sands, which I'm probably going to say yes to. I really like the idea of learning more about the outdoors, about navigation, about the stars, about survival skills. So I did their flagship course with my oldest friend last year. It is tough. You don't walk through a doorway for 5 days. I mean, yes, I'm paying for the experience, but you've got a 24-hour ration pack. You don't kill animals with your own bare hands, because people were half committing to that and it was very, very unkind. So there are animals that have been dispatched, but they teach you how to gut and skin them. And if you're lucky, you can cook that. But our hare took 3 hours and it had to feed 11 people, so it was barely worth it. So you're hungry, you don't go through a doorway for 5 days, you're sleeping in shelters you've built yourself. And in the last 24 hours, they simulate self-rescue. So there is a landing in the distance in case one of you catches fire, but it doesn't come and help you unless it's an emergency. You have to simulate rescue. It's a great experience.
Yeah. Great way to stimulate, you know, kind of perspective, which I always think is a really important part of resilience. You know, how tough can it get? And when you're in that sort of physical, distress, it is quite sobering, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in getting into your discomfort zone to build resilience and immunity to a point as well. So that made me think, well, let's become an instructor. So it's a sideline. So I do the day a week on the property side. Body Shot is my main gig, and I do a bit of Bear Grylls on the side as well. And it just provides a nice bit of variety.
I like that.
So, yeah, so that's what I get tremendous. Up to.
Sounds tremendous. Fantastic, Leanne. If people want to find out more about you, I'm going to put a link to bodyshotperformance.com on the show notes. And also you have a health quotient questionnaire, which I think is a kind of self-administered scorecard that people can fill in. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I will give you a link to that. I don't remember that URL offhand, but it is on the website. So bodyshotperformance.com. And if you scroll down, you'll see take the test.
Yeah. I think I've got that link. So I'll stick that in the show notes.
Brilliant.
And then your Twitter, bodyshotpt, is your
still your Twitter? We don't really do much on Twitter. I think the two places that are best to go to is Facebook, where Bodyshot Performance Limited on Facebook.
Okay.
And LinkedIn, if you look for Leanne Spencer 1975 on LinkedIn, you'll find me.
LinkedIn is
where I spend most of my time.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and we have a crisis recovery report that we've just published. And I'll also post, I'll give you a link to that.
Send me the link to that and I'll stick that in the show notes.
That's
and if
on
that,
the website,
if you can find that CIPD link as well, that would be great. It's always great to provide some additional resources that people can follow up on. Well, look, thank you very much, Leanne. Brilliant speaking to you. Wish you all the best and good luck with the Bear Grylls stuff. I am genuinely interested in that. I love watching his stuff, and I kind of got in the back of my head that I'd be really good in those sorts of situations, knowing probably that I wouldn't, and I'll buckle after a while because without wine gums, I'm useless. So it's been fantastic speaking to you, Leanne, and thank you very much, and take care and look after yourself.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me on. Thank you to everyone who's listening as well. I'll get those links over to you.
Brilliant.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye. So thank you for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. Hope you found this episode useful. We'd love to get your feedback and thoughts about the show. And also any questions or ideas that you've got for things you'd like us to cover in future episodes. So you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. Or you can get in touch with us via the contact form on our website, which is engagingic.com. Also, you'll be able to sign up for our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show, new episodes, and also anything that we think you might be interested in when it comes to internal communications or employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it via your podcast service. And also, you can subscribe to it via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you know anyone else who might be interested in the show, please distribute it to them. Please let them know about it. We want to try and grow a community of people here who are contributing to the show, giving us new ideas for episodes and things that you'd like to cover in future. So thank you very much.